Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
So it's my pleasure this morning to introduce Casey Green. And for those of you who don't know Casey, he's the founding director of the Campus Computing Project. And the Campus Computing Project is the largest continuing study of the role of IT in American colleges and universities. And this year it's celebrating its 20th year.
Good morning. Thank you all for being here. Very quickly about the methodology. This year we had 523 campuses that completed the survey. It's a web-based survey. We send it to a specific individual or designated individuals from the participating institutions. The survey period was about 1 month, and 76% of the campuses that participated in this year's survey were in last year's survey. That's been a fairly constant number, and it speaks to the kind of durability and the reliability and the validity of these data, that it's not different populations in and out. There's a very strong core of campuses year to year that continue to participate in the survey. A little bit more about the survey population. If you look at the demography of American higher education, the U.S. Department of Education says there's some 4,300 public, private, and for-profit 2- and 4-year degree-granting colleges and universities. Of those, a little over 500 enroll more than 10,000 students and represent 50% of the headcount. Of those, some 1,150 institutions, which represent 27% of the college's degree-granting institutions, enroll less than 500 students and represent 2% of the headcount. Our survey population does not include for-profits, does not include private 2-year colleges, does not include campuses under 500 enrollment. So that whittles it down to about a population of 3,300. So we're hitting about 8 or 9% in total of the population of U.S. colleges and universities. And when you look at this by segment, for example, we had 46% of the public doctoral universities in the United States participate, that research and doctoral, 49% of the private research universities, baccalaureate and master public institutions, 27% of the population, 21% of private 4-year colleges. So we have very good representation and are very comfortable and confident about the data that we'll present by sector. Because ultimately, most of you don't care about a single number. You want to know about the number for campuses like mine. Some quick highlights of the survey. The good news, sort of, is that the budget cuts seem to be abating. There were not as many campuses reporting budget cuts this year as last, but it was more so for privates than for publics, and the completely counterintuitive thing that you'll see when we get into the slides is that, in fact, the numbers of community colleges that had budget cuts went up this year, even as it went down a little bit for public universities and public 4-year colleges. We're seeing a very clear transition in the LMS market. Many campuses confront essentially a time-certain sunset or termination for Blackboard's products in terms of its legacy Web CT, an older Blackboard logo products, and a later one in terms of Angel. That seems to be a clear catalyst for a number of campuses to put their LMS strategy into review, and we're seeing three alternatives in particular all gaining market share from where they were several years ago. This market is now far more competitive than it was in 2005 and 2006 when many campuses were either a Blackboard campus or a Web CT campus. More about that as we go forward. We're seeing a lot of interest in mobile LMS. This is a new item on the survey this year. Large numbers of CIOs, senior campus IT officers, saying, yeah, this is really part of our long-term strategy, but we're at very early phase on deployment. Again, we've got some new data about the percentage of campuses that are deployed. Social networks are creating social problems. We saw a very interesting jump this year in the percentage of public universities and public 4-year colleges reporting that something on the social network created a social problem on campus. Again, in the wake of the tragedy that happened at Rutgers recently and some other individual campus incidents, it's very clear colleges and universities are not supporting these social networks but have to deal with the consequences of student behavior on the network. We usually begin the presentation by sort of looking back. We ask CIOs, what's the single most important IT issue confronting your institution over the next 2 to 3 years? Force choice, pick from a list of 10 items. When we started asking this question in 2000, instructional integration was 40% of the aggregate responses, user support a little over 20%. Together, 3/5 of the survey respondents said instructional integration or user support, and I would argue those are flip sides of the same coin. We saw the instructional integration number go down for a couple of years, but still number one. And then it flipped in 2004 from being 1/5 of the respondents saying instructional integration is the number one item to network and data security. Network and data security was number one for several years, hovering somewhere between 20 and 30% to 2008. And then last year, we saw a very different pattern repeated again this year. All of a sudden, no single item registered more than 1/5 of the respondents. We saw a very interesting dispersion. The two top items were financing, replacement of aging hardware and software. Makes a lot of sense, particularly the budget pressures. But the interesting one is the issue about hiring and retaining staff. We have not seen that one as a very high priority since the days of the dot-com era, when corporate folks were poaching campus IT talent. And there was a huge demand. You know, you think about the labor market today in the United States. There's a lot of IT talent potentially out there. Maybe the IT talent on campus is better than it is that's in the labor market in general. Whatever it is, very interesting to see that in aggregate, hiring, retaining qualified staff comes in at number one at about 14%. Interesting patterns by sector again. So hiring, retaining number one for all campuses, but it's financing in some areas, data network security. But none of these number one issues by sector garner over 1/5 of the survey respondents. We see, again, these kinds of patterns of hiring and retaining staff hitting in a number of sectors, financing, replacement. And here's a very interesting one, online education, particularly in private research universities. And when we began to see something like this last year, the question is, why is a CIO concerned about online ed other than just the infrastructure? Not responsible for academic programs, not responsible for quality assurance. And then we got some data from another survey that we did with WCET last fall that began to explain this, and that is it almost half the institutions that participated in last fall's Managing Online Education Survey, 182 institutions, the CIO was the operating officer for online ed programs. We know that we're seeing rapidly rising enrollments in online ed. The key role of IT in terms of the infrastructure, not necessarily the content. And it turns out that at least in many institutions for the moment, and I suspect this is transitional, it is the case that the CIO is the operating officer for that, even if he or she does not have, is either a part of the title, maybe part of the bullet point under the title, Chief Information Officer, Vice President, Vice Provost for Information Technology and Online Ed. Just sort of happens that way. It's a very interesting organizational relationship, given that this is an operating academic enterprise as opposed to an operational and support enterprise. Let's move on into the budget cuts. You can see what these trends look like. In the middle part of the decade, we were coming out of the downturn that we experienced in the wake of the dot-com bust and the recession in the early part of the decade. So in 2006, 2007, very few campuses and across sectors reporting budget cuts, began to jump a little bit in 2008, exploded to 8 and 9. And in fact, the numbers in 2009 were higher than they were when we asked these same questions in the 1990s and the downturn that occurred in the early part of the decade. Upwards of 70% public research universities, 3 in 5 private research universities, back over to almost 2/3 across. You can see what these numbers look like. Taking budget cuts. And often it's not 1 to 2%, it's 3 to 4% or more, coupled often with mid-year budget cuts. So these have compounding consequences. The budget that was cut last year gets cut again, and I also took a mid-year hit. And yet at the same time, we know that there is no let-up demand for resources and services, infrastructure, wireless, mobility, academic support, infrastructure, rebuilding networks, and other kinds of things. And again, the interesting irony that I would point to here, given what we know are the exploding demands for both on-campus and online programs and community colleges, they're taking a bigger hit. Their hits are going up as others are abating a little bit. This is a Potemkin village scenario. We're going to build a facade with no infrastructure. We see this from another survey we've done for several years, surveying community college presidents. The way they're responding to explosive demand is hiring part-timers, always a long-term strategy in community colleges, but at the same time, no academic counselors, no vocational counselors, No folks to do technology support for faculty, not adding people to do technology support for students, even as online and on-campus enrollments are exploding. So again, it really begins to look like a Potemkin village of we'll get somebody in the classroom, that kind of the facade as the czar goes by, but we're not building the infrastructure to really make this work. We look at budget trends by function in selected areas, and just a small sampling. In terms of central IT budgets, the red bar is not the percentage of the budget cut, but rather the percentage of campuses reporting budget cut. And again, this will vary by sector. These are the aggregate numbers. So we still see that those numbers are large, almost 40% in aggregate reporting a budget cut this year, but that's down from almost 50% compared to those reporting increases. We're seeing wireless networking, not surprisingly, going up. In terms of how that relates to more wire, not just in terms of infrastructure, you'll see those numbers for classrooms as we go through the presentation, going mobile, other kinds of things. So we're seeing some very interesting patterns, and again, the survey report that'll be out in December also disaggregates this by sector. We're also seeing a lot of churn in organizational structures. Our survey respondents this year, similar numbers for last year, a third say, yes, we reorganized our IT units in the past 2 years. New provost, new president, budget pressures, retirement, arrival of somebody, whatever it is. Yeah, we started moving these arrangements around, added, subtracted operating units into the IT organization. Another almost equal number expect to do that in the next 2 years, and consistently we're seeing about 15% who did it and expect to do it again. Things are in transition for all kinds of reasons, but it's happening in more of it. We've asked for a number of years about security incidents. Did in the last year you have an incident involving something? Stolen computer, hack attack, identity management, virus. For most part, these have, the virus and the spyware have, numbers have gone down a little bit. The networking, I'll come back, student social incident, I'll come back to break that out. Data loss, employee malfeasance, those numbers are up, down a little bit. That's anger and frustration. That's a stress measure. If somebody inside your IT organization is playing havoc, and creating havoc, just in terms of work overloads, the absence of recognition and reward for the extra work that they're doing. This is the one that was quite striking this year, that you can see almost 10 actual percentage point jump in public universities, public research universities, and the percentage of campuses reporting something on the social network created a social incident for us on campus that we had to address, up 8 percentage points in public four-year colleges. Again, at least as I talk with campus officials, colleges and universities are trying to don't support these. They are not sponsored in any ways. Student behaviors are established well before they arrive. Getting a Facebook account or on some other social network is not a rite of passage of coming to college, and yet the consequences of student behavior on the social network have consequences for campus environments. What do we do with it? Well, in all likelihood, I suspect we're going to see more user education. As a number of campuses have started that already about privacy, moving that, also addressing digital citizenship rights and responsibilities. Not just your entitlements, but your obligations in this environment. And again, the numbers for employee misconduct, interesting, you know, they sort of go up and down, generally kind of flat over time, but this really is a stress measure. Somebody is angry. Somebody is overworked. Somebody's unhappy in terms of, and that's creating a security problem for your institution. One of, we've asked a number of questions that began just after Katrina, I'm sorry, just after 9/11 about network security and disaster recovery. And there just seems to be this hardcore of campuses in each sector. We didn't include the network one this year because we wanted to include some other data, but the patterns are the same. Yeah, we have the IT disaster plan. Yeah, we have a strategic plan for network security, but there's a core group, largest in community colleges and public private four-year colleges, haven't gotten around to doing that plan. And in many cases, it's not a matter of if, but when. And we also know that many plans were done a while ago, but haven't been updated. So let's do a little bit of visual polling. How many of you have recently updated a plan for IT disaster recovery? And I'm guessing that looks to be, at best, maybe a quarter to a third. And how many of you have a plan that's more than 3 years old? And I'm guessing that's about maybe 10 to 12%. And how many of you don't have a plan? Let's see if the data are accurate. And you don't want to raise your hand because you don't want anybody to see. All right, we've got a couple. You're keeping your hands low so nobody can see you, but I can see you up here from the podium. And we see it's just a matter, you know, how can you not have this plan? It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And yet we continue to see these patterns of a large number of campuses haven't gotten around, haven't updated It is really a matter of if, not when. Campus is trying to figure out what to do with Second Life at an institutional level. We know a lot of faculty members individually in some departments or academic programs are doing a lot of interesting things in sort of the whole Web 2.0 environment. A little bit of movement on campus wikis, but not that much last year to this particularly. Second Life, those numbers are going up. In some cases, again, not a lot of activity. Maybe more the campus has bought the island to protect the domain, to protect the name in some ways. Again, more of that seems to be departmentally oriented as opposed to an institutional strategy. What do we do with it? You know, what do we have? We're on Facebook. What is our Facebook strategy or our Twitter strategy? Maybe, again, it comes out of admissions or alumni services as opposed to a broader institutional strategy. Emergency notification is an activity that emerged out of nowhere, but very clearly tied to one event, certainly, and that was obviously the tragedies at Virginia Tech several years ago. We added this question to the survey just after Virginia Tech. Do you have an emergency notification strategy? What are the operational elements of your emergency notification plan? We're seeing one of the most interesting things in these data is that 100% of the survey respondents now report they are using a third-party provider to do emergency notification services. Blackboard Connect, 3N, Internet, Rave, whatever it might be, and the numbers vary a bit by sector. Last year it was 85%. 4 years ago, the category didn't exist. Didn't exist. You know, in the wake of Virginia Tech, many campuses had no budget as they were looking at the close of the academic year in terms of emergency notification, and they found money in the months immediately following events at Virginia Tech, at Delaware State, at Louisiana, at Northern Illinois, to be sure that they had that, and yet we still see some variation in terms of what are the operational elements, particularly as they relate to phones. Remember, this is a mobile population, not a desk-bound population, and it's not just students, but also staff, faculty, and others on your campus. Related to that is the whole issue of participation strategy. We've been tracking this for 3 years, and the great irony here is that the vast majority of campuses are still on an opt-out, or opt-in. I have to register to get the benefit of this service, whether it's an emergency notification or a snow day or something else, as opposed to an opt-out. I mean, the interesting, good news, I would argue, is that these numbers are going down. A small but growing number of campuses require you to opt out as opposed to opt in. What good is the service if only a third of your potential target population has registered for it? Because they're not going to walk around necessarily to everybody else around them. But the downward trend is actually a good sign in terms of understanding how to get value out of these. Other data from the survey indicate that overwhelmingly, what campuses that have triggered the notification in the past year did so for notification services. Not a little bit of activity on kind of student services, on recruitment, alumni activity, but overwhelmingly of those campuses that triggered the notification system, absolutely for some kind of emergency notification. Tied to the issue of budgets, what do we do about our computer labs if on our particular campus, our particular student population, large numbers, overwhelming numbers of students own devices, increasingly notebooks and other kinds of mobile devices? These things just won't go away. We added this question last year. Are you phasing them out? The numbers are about the same. In some cases, we're seeing a transition in the role of the lab, more specialized software, seeing a lot of desktop virtualization for high-end stuff as opposed to office kinds of applications. But even as campuses would like to regain the space, use it for other kinds of purposes, the labs are just not going away in all sectors. So we added a new item to the survey this year, and we were very, this was done months before all the kind of corporate activity of different firms buying or aligning themselves with different lecture capture. And we asked the survey respondents, typically CIOs, CTOs, deputy CIOs, senior IT offices across campuses, is lecture capture an important part of our campus plan for developing and delivering content? And you can see the numbers across all sectors, lowest in private four-year colleges, which would represent a large part of traditional liberal arts colleges, high-touch, kind of classroom environment. The answer is yes. Agree or strongly agree in fall 2010. On the other hand, when we look at deployment of lecture capture, whether it is it's explicitly lecture capture technologies or analogs to that, podcasting, for example, we see we are still in a very early phase of implementation. This is still early on. And there are a lot of interesting questions yet to be resolved. Who owns it? Who archives it? Who makes it accessible? What are we going to do with all this stuff? If my colleague and I are both teaching Widgets 101 and her lectures are overwhelmingly much better rated than mine, why do we want to capture both of them? And that gets into issues about access choice, faculty autonomy, faculty governance. So the technology in some cases may be the easy part of the campus policy conversation and the planning conversation about lecture capture. Yeah, we can turn it on. The question is, what do we do after we turn it off? And also looking at some very interesting issues about student behavior. Whether it's just not only undergraduates, but I'm hearing stories from campuses and also individual med students. I don't go to a class anymore. I watch the lecture. It gives me command and control over the presentation of content, my pace, my time, my supplements. So lots of interesting questions at sort of the front end of this conversation about lecture capture underway. Outsourced mail services have been a very interesting strategy for campuses to try to save some money as opposed to doing hosted mail services. And we're seeing a very interesting but not surprising split between student mail as opposed to institutional mail for faculty and staff. Last year, about 60% of campuses said that they were either they had outsourced or were converting to outsourced student email. Another 35% saying it's under review for this year. We haven't made a decision. But that student email, the numbers for faculty are about 15%. Some of that may be branding. Some of that may be e-discovery, concern about privacy, a variety of issues. And in terms of who's offering those services, again, you can see the numbers, the real competition, and the numbers vary a little bit by sector, obviously between Google and Microsoft for hosted email services. Why student email? Because students already have email addresses. Again, this is not a rite of passage experience of going to college as it was 15 or 20 years ago, get my first email account. They applied to college on email. They went to the web to find out they did or did not get the digital equivalent of the thick or thin envelope to get into Acme College. And I don't want to give up my email address that all my friends and everybody else knows, much like I don't want to give up my cell phone if I move out of an area code to a different part of the state or cross country to go to college. That's part of my identity. So it raises some interesting issues. And the other thing we know about undergraduates, at least from Student Monitor's annual survey of full-time undergraduates in four-year colleges, is that the average full-time undergraduate has 3.4 email addresses. Interestingly, I think it's 3.2 for boys and men and 3.4 for girls. One their parent knows, and you can guess, who has access to the other ones in terms of their own digital identities, let alone other ways of doing email through Facebook, social networking sites, Twitter, and everything else. Related to this, the movement to the other part of the app question, outsourced apps, Google Docs, Microsoft Live, those numbers remain small in terms of mandating as opposed to just saying that that's an option. And some of that may also be the fact that licensing costs, when you get into a per head, are not that expensive. A number of campuses have very inexpensive licensing agreements. They vary a lot. I'm not allowed to say what those numbers are. Many of you know what those numbers are at your institutions or the numbers you would like to get as you hear about them through the neural network. Peer-to-peer has been was a really big issue for a while. The Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008 actually included explicit legislative mandates from Congress, lobbied for and then lobbied against, lobbied for by the recording industry, the movie industry, and a user education on the part of members of Congress. Steve Warren is here, was part of that effort, to try to user education. We are not the culprit. Most of this is in the consumer economy. It's not on campus broadband. Nonetheless, campus has been the easy target. So the legislative mandates, not the regs that came out a year later, and we've been asking about the legislative mandates because they're a little more porous in the regs as opposed to the mandates. The legislative mandates, as passed by Congress and signed by the president in 2008, had three conditions. You had to submit a campus plan to combat peer-to-peer to the Secretary of Education. Not necessarily sanctions if you didn't, but you were supposed to develop a plan. And that applied to any degree-granting college or university in the U.S. that participated indirectly in federal money. So if you had students on Pell Grants, you were covered by this as well. You had to deploy some kind of technology deterrent to stem peer-to-peer. You had to buy that. Could be shaping, other kinds of things. And finally, perhaps in some ways the most difficult of these mandates, you had to offer some alternative to peer-to-peer, which at the time I suspect the industry was hoping you'll buy a campus license, as some did in the middle part of the decade, except that business has gone away. The service firms that were offering those licenses have effectively vanished. Steve and others are far more knowledgeable. I suspect that the regs now say you can just tell people there are places to go, Amazon, iTunes, other kinds of music services, that fulfills the requirement of alternatives as opposed to actually explicitly providing that alternative from Acme EDU. The numbers represent the change. So at least on the first two of the mandates, campus plan and technology-based deterrence, those numbers have gone up since HEOA. The regs now, in fact, are operational. So I suspect we're going to see those numbers go up a little bit more. We also ask, what are the costs of compliance with the HEOA mandates? They've been averaging about $28,000 a year across sectors, with a range from $68,000 in research universities to about $18,000 in community colleges. E-portfolios, the numbers continue to rise slowly, but going up. Many campuses are using e-portfolios in some ways as a proxy for assessment. Yeah, we're doing a lot of outcomes work. We saw a kind of an early jump on some of this in four-year colleges because they're often linked to teacher education programs. There are a couple of statewide e-portfolio initiatives, for example, in Minnesota. We can expect to see more of this. And it's not just about traditional text, as the technologies and the resources that students want to put in their e-portfolios increasingly involve rich media. So create some interesting challenges and issues as well for campuses. E-books have been a hot topic. When we break this out in terms of e-readers, yeah, over the next 5 years, it's going to come and it's going to happen. Will the platforms, Kindle, iPad, other kinds of Android devices that we know are coming into the market, will they be important? Numbers, we are, again, in a very early stage in this. There are going to be a lot of experiments. Some will work, some won't work. At least as I've sort of scouted this informally, we still are a long way in terms of an implementation of question of moving the cup to the lip. At least some of the early titles that are out there, they don't compete in the student line against full cost of a new book. It's what's the price of an e-book option for widgets against a used book. And the used book, of course, students can resell. You can't do that with an e-book. So we've got some issues about pricing. We've got some issues about features and formats. Whatever we say about digital natives, the truth, folks who are even older, they came of age with print. Their primary content, even if they game and they Google and they do all this other stuff on the web, was still print. A lot of uncertainty in terms of features and formats and adding added value and richness in terms of the ebook. LMS deployments, percentage of classes are up, not surprisingly. I mentioned earlier that the market is in transition. So we have seen some very interesting shifts and share gains in this market. This is what it looks like today. Among the 523 campuses, our metric is, do you have a single product standard across your campus? About 90% of campuses do. Where there isn't the case, it's often the case the online program may be using one product, the on-campus program may be using a different product. Blackboard, obviously, the leader in this marketplace, its numbers have come down. You'll see that in a moment. D2L's numbers have grown by a factor of 5 from 2 to 10% in the last 4 years. Moodle is up from 4 to 16%. Sakai, which is more clustered in research universities and public four institutions, gone from about 3 to 5% during this period. There's some other LMSs out there, and about 7 to 8% of campuses with some variation by sector report, no LMS. We're also seeing different deployment patterns in terms of where the LMS and which LMS you're using. So in private four-year colleges, Moodle is now over a third of the institution's campus standard, up from 24% last year, 19% the year before. D2L's numbers are up. Blackboard has the strongest share in public and private research universities, public four-year colleges, but it's a market in transition. And again, part of that transition is because Blackboard has announced the sunset of legacy products, the old WebCT, versions of old WebCT and some old Blackboard, as 2012. And recently, according to a couple of things I've read on campus bulletin boards and campus planning documents, Angel will sunset in 2014. That's a catalyst for review. The market is more competitive now. And again, when we look at these share numbers, we can see some of these share trends over time. If you took the numbers last year, just after the Angel acquisition, when Blackboard's numbers were at about 58%, plus the other 7% for Angel, put them on top, and then you can see that those numbers have tumbled a little bit from last year to this. That's not necessarily the same campuses, but those are other campuses, often with legacy or the older versions of some flavor of Blackboard, having made a decision. And other campuses are moving on and migrating from legacy up to Blackboard 9X. So, but there's a large number of them, as reported on Blackboard's website. If you look at Blackboard's published numbers of their enterprise LMS clients and their legacy or their Blackboard basic clients, most but not all are in higher education. As of July, there were about 450 legacy clients left. And if you kind of try to parse out the number of angel clients that came over to Blackboard from the 2009 acquisition, it looked to be about 425, 430. So there's a large number of licensees, many but not all higher ed, that at some point confront this choice. Do we go up or do we make some other choice about our LMS over the next several years? Related to LMS, because it is the LMS providers who are bringing mobile apps, campus respondents are telling us the LMS is an important part of our strategy, without question, but we are in the early phase. We are in the early phase, and again, they're coming first and foremost almost exclusively from the LMS providers, although the features and functionalities are not LMS necessarily. They include but go well beyond. It's the movement of campus services from the bookmark on your browser to the button on your smartphone. 98% of students own cell phones, almost half own smartphones, according to Student Monitor. And we see so much of this in the consumer economy, it's coming over to campus with an expectation, why don't we have it? So we see that about a fifth of public universities have already deployed, another 10-11% expect to deploy in the coming year, and the numbers, again, vary by sector. Wireless classrooms is a good metric, and we will lit these classrooms up. Yes, numbers are there. Anti-plagiarism, these numbers are up as well, not surprising as we deal with issues of intellectual property and digital citizenship. Finally, we actually saw a little dip this year. We are doing assessment of a campus strategy to assess our investment in ROI. They went up a little bit in the wake of the Spellings report, tumbled a little bit this year. That may be resources or retirements. I want to touch on a couple of key issues before I close. The budget cuts hurt because we don't go back up. They're compounding. I was cut last year. I'm cut again this year. It's taking off what was a smaller number each year. Consequences for infrastructure, for academic support and services. And as each of you know, there is no let up in demand. And with that, of course, rising stress. We are creating Potemkin villages in terms of the facade. It has the risk of imploding on us. I want to announce today the first Campus Computing Digital Puck Awards. This is a new project of the Campus Computing. It is absolutely arbitrarily done. It's my decision, so I am solely culpable or responsible, depending on how you feel about this. But I think Gretzky's notion of the digital puck metaphor applies. Wayne Gretzky, as some of you may know, it kind of quipped at one point. Somebody's asked, why are you good? He said, because I skate to where the puck's going, not to where it is. And I think that that's not a bad metaphor for some of the technologies that are coming or will have impact. We know something is out there that's in motion. We may have a general sense of what that trajectory looks like, but it's something we have to skate to. And so this year's Digital Puck Award winners are, not much surprise, mobile apps. You don't have to applaud. That's all right. They're not going to be here for the award. But it really is from bookmarks to buttons in terms of environment and expectations on the part of our clientele. This e-books are an ever-arriving technology. We're going to go through several waves of this. We've already seen in the consumer market new products come and go. Others trying to find where they are, and it's all parts of the supply chain. The environment, the e-readers, the platforms, the content, all have a part of this in terms of figuring out what this new world looks like. We know it's there. We know it's in motion. Good luck predicting exactly what it's going to look like, but we have some sense of where it has to go. And finally, lecture capture, again, it's clearly important from the survey data. Lots of questions about what we're going to do with this stuff. I mentioned the transition in the LMS market 6 years ago when the Mellon Foundation provided essentially venture capital for Sakai. I described the LMS market in 2004 as a mature market with immature or evolving technologies in the sense that everybody had one. It wasn't you could find new buyers, but rather these were still evolving, and that was a recipe for volatility. Absolutely seeing that in terms of some of the data I've already presented. We, at the same time, we're seeing a migration to hosted services as campuses realize they will save money, and whatever LMS they're with offers the better opportunity for better services and resource going to hosted. We've got these time certain sunsets or termination of some legacy, which is a cat from Blackboard, catalyst for review. And it's unclear about sort of the link between mobile apps and core LMS providers. Some are picking and choosing. Does open source allow me to bolt onto D2L or Blackboard? So we're seeing some very interesting permutations in this marketplace about things that build off the LMS, just like other services that used to build off your ERP. E-books, I said, are bullish. No clear compelling value yet for students, and student use is very low in terms of what we see from Student Monitor. And again, the price comparison is not the new book. It's the used book after I resell the used book again in terms of understanding what the competitive price point is. Students get it. Some of the firms in the marketplace don't seem to get it, or at least their marketing conversations don't acknowledge that in their public marketing presentations. Shameless self-promotion, my piece on ebooks, the Digital Tweed blog at Inside Higher Education. Not yet at any place. Compelling value proposition. Three challenges, one price I've mentioned. Features, how do we leverage the technology for the opportunity as opposed to just a pour from print to screen? And what's the format? Consistency, added value, other kinds of issues. And we're done. Thank you, folks, for putting up with me for another year.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.